Radio Podcast, and these are your hosts,
Matt
and Mark. And my brain already lost what I was going to say.
It's really early.
I don't know. Yeah, it's a little early on a Sunday morning.
Yeah,
it's so we're back. Another episode.
Yes.
I already said that.
Volume 2.
But it's episode 83 overall.
Yeah.
We're getting rid of the original numbering. Remember, we didn't want to be like Marvel Comics confuse people.
And then all of a sudden we're at like episode 90.
Yeah. Cause we're only 17 episodes away from episode 100. So we're going to have to celebrate that when the time comes.
Absolutely. You know?
And, that should be pretty exciting. It's been, a crazy week. We've had some new trailers come out after post Super Bowl.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about those a little later in the show, like we always do, as we give you our news briefs towards the end of the show. And it's also been a not much else happening kind of week. It's kind of slow time of the year news wise. Some trailers and stuff. There's a few things to talk about, but not a whole lot going on right now. But it's always like that in February. It's February. This is February. We're boring. We want you to spend $60 on roses and celebrate your love, but nothing else. You know,
that's true. And we don't have another Deadpool movie coming out in February, so you won't get interesting trailers until May.
Well, we have Black Panther next week.
So Black Panther.
That's the big February release this year.
Right.
Which not sure when I'm going to see it yet. I was going to try to go next Sunday, but I just don't know yet.
I looked it up on Studio Movie Grill just to see what kind of seats they had left, and you're right, man. It's like they're bought up pretty good.
Yeah, so I don't know. I might, as much as I want to see it, I might wait a week on this one. I'm thinking I might.
Just let it cool off a little bit.
Yeah. And,
I've already seen 100% on IMDb.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's not unheard of. There's been a few movies that have done that. Then they end up dropping back a little bit. I don't think
90-ish.
Is there anything? I mean, first off, I hate Rotten Tomatoes. I think it ruins movies because people look at it and they don't want to go see films because, oh, my God, it scored 58%. Just go enjoy it for yourself, you know?
Yeah, they get some stuff right. They get some stuff wrong. And it's like, you take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah, it's it's ridiculous. I don't know. I just think anything you should judge for yourself and go see, a.k.a. The Last Jedi. There are people that stayed away from it because they heard bad things. And I still think The Last Jedi is a brilliant film.
I was about to say, you got to go see that. It's not like Transformers The Last Night.
That was a terrible film.
Yeah. Where it's like, I didn't like Extinction, and then you see the reviews are like, oh, it's even worse than Extinction. And
yeah.
You're like, okay, I'm going to stay.
But the one thing is, The Last Night really was terrible.
Yeah.
It was like, I'm glad I rented that for free because it was awful. So, on today's episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast, we're talking movies as we do now.
Absolutely.
We've covered Batman and Enter the Dragon, and we've got some cool stuff coming up, but we're not going to blow our wad, so to speak, and tell you what movies they are. We tell you one week at a time. But today we're doing a really big favorite of ours in 2002's Equilibrium, which is directed by Kurt Wimmer and stars Christian Bale and Taye Diggs and Emily Watson and Sean Bean.
Yes.
And this is a film that is truly a cult following type film.
Yeah, it really is.
It's right there in the vein of other cult classics like The Boondock Saints and what else is a huge...
Oh, like Super Troopers?
Yeah, movies like that.
Some movies like that.
And they get very limited theatrical release. They get some notoriety because of an actor like, and this was pre-Batman Christian Bale. He had done American Psycho, but he wasn't the Oscar-winning Christian Bale we have now, it's Taye Diggs wasn't even huge yet. Chicago came out later that year, and he became a big star after he starred in Chicago.
I thought I thought before that he had made How Stella Got a Groove.
He was known, but I wouldn't say he was huge. He was kind of like Sean Bean and any of the actors in this movie. They were known. You've seen their faces, but they weren't huge stars yet. And so it's a remarkable sci-fi film. It's not perfect. It's not great, but it's got such a charm to it. It's filmed on a very low budget of $20 million. I say only $20 million,
$20 million.
I'd say pre 1991 standards, Terminator 2 and up.
Yeah,
$20 million is a low budget film from the 90s on, I think. And what Kurt Wimmer as a director does with this film is amazing. He uses classical matte paintings instead of CGI backgrounds. They use practical effects by just taking vehicles and painting them white to make them look futuristic. Things like that. And it's a neat film, and it's on Netflix quite often. It's not right now, but it always comes back. It seems like Netflix has a weird thing where they'll take a movie and they'll have it on there 2 or 3 months, then they take it off, and then they come bring it back on. So I'm sure Equilibrium will show back up on Netflix or Hulu here very soon. Because it's that kind of a film. It's that cult classic that's found a following through home video, DVD, and through streaming. I actually did see Equilibrium in theaters because at the time, I think I was, that was when I was really getting into the internet.
Okay.
The early 90s. I was running I had a Taproot fan site for the band Taproot that I was running. And I was really, that was a time I was taking some college courses and really getting into the internet big time. So I found Equilibrium through the internet. Kurt Wimmer was very active on the internet. He would go, there's a website called Chud, which is still around, yeah. Cinematic Happenings Under Development. And Chud was really supporting this film. That's how I discovered it. Kurt Wimmer was on the message boards on Chud promoting his film.
That's awesome.
He even conversated with me a little bit through the message boards. He was really cool by promoting his film. And so I just got real attached to this film. And I've probably, in the 16 years it's been out, I've probably seen it 100 times or more in 16 years. I've really loved Equilibrium. I want to say I went back and saw it a second time in theaters, but I don't think I did because it was only in theaters like 2 or 3 weeks. I think I meant to go back and I never did.
Well, you did see it like 50 times on DVD.
Right, but I did see it. When did you discovered Equilibrium probably on home video?
On home video.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was late to the game too. I think I didn't discover it until like.
You Christian probably Bale heard about it thing. Through me.
Probably heard I'm about sure. it through you. And I think I finally watched it like. Post 2005, like post Batman Begins, whenever I was like, wow, Bale's a pretty good actor. And then I think you were like, well, you should really see Equilibrium. You know, that's probably what got him this job. And I was like, okay, cool. So I watched Equilibrium. Like, this is cool. Gun kata, martial arts with guns.
Yeah.
I was like, this guy was John Wick before John Wick was John Wick.
That's true.
So I was like, and I thought to myself, I said, man, if we still did these, like, these versus, you know, matches. If someone, I don't know if we ever did John Preston versus John Wick.
No.
That would have been like.
Oh, or a face off.
And a face off.
Face off might come back one day if we ever have a regular third host again or if Frank comes back. We're planning on bringing Frank back soon for a show.
Yes.
You know, he's going to, you know, he, like we said, he's creative differences aside. He's chose to not be a regular on the show, but he'll be back soon.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the cool thing about Wimmer is that. He had his own idea about gun kata.
Yeah.
And which he went over with his producer, his cat, and he believed it should be hard and, you know, very, you know, kind of static and angly, like, kind of like karate. And that's evident in the first scene of the movie, whenever the lights are shot out. But the other producer, he wanted it to be more fluid, and he expressed how gun kata should be in its next film, Ultraviolet. And so that's how you can kind of see the difference between Wimmer's and his creative.
We're definitely going to get more heavy into the gun kata here in a bit. But, you know, the film was not a huge box office success because it played limited. It only made $5 million worldwide.
Yeah.
But the film actually turned profit. We were just talking about pre-show a little bit. The movie was budget $20 million, but foreign markets really wanted this film because they dystopian sci-fi is very popular. It's very popular here, but it's very popular overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And so they bought the heck out of the film, and it was distributed overseas. And granted, it didn't make its money back box office-wise, but it made its money back through distribution, eventually home video and DVD. And Kurt Wimmer, who only went on to direct one other film, which was Ultraviolet, unfortunately, but he's a very famous screenplay writer. He did Salt. He did...
Oh, yes.
He did something a couple years ago, was nominated for an Oscar. He's done a lot of screenplay writing. That's where Kurt Wimmer does now for films. And he created this world of Equilibrium. And to tell people, it takes place in the future. We didn't even talk about the plot of the film yet.
Yeah.
And about 50 years from now, I think the official 2072 is the official time. And it's after post-World War III. And
which they use stock footage for.
Right.
Yeah.
The powers that be believe that... emotion has caused the violence of the world.
Right.
So they come up with a drug called Prozium to stop your emotions. It keeps you from feeling.
And the word comes from Prozac and Vidocan, or Valium, which are both mood depressors. At first, they were going to name it Lithium, after the city.
Sometime.
But there's a drug that's named Lithium, and it's meant for blood pressure, something like that. So they didn't want to avoid, any trademark infringement. So they had to change it to Prozium.
Yeah. And so the Tetragrammaton clerics, which is what Christian Bale's character plays and Taye Diggs, are a group of police enforcers, so to speak, that go out into the Nethers, which is outside the city of Libria. Everyone lives in a city called Libria, and it's controlled by the father and the government. And so they go out and they find what's called sense offenders. And these sense offenders are people that aren't on Prozium. They're feeling. They're breaking the law, so to speak.
Yeah, breaking the law.
By collecting paintings, listening to music, reading books, living outside the cities, outside the law. And like I said, the film's not perfect. That's one part that's not explained. It's like, why even go bother these people? They're not bothering anything. But I guess the basic idea of it is that if they allow these people to feel and to have emotion, that it can bring back violence and can affect their city state. And but so I guess that's a given fact of the film. And it's funny, there's the opening scene of the film features Dominic Purcell, actor who is on Legends of Tomorrow now.
Yes.
And he was originally was going to play John Preston.
That's right.
And he but he had a scheduling conflict.
It was Bale that had a
scheduling. Bale had a scheduling conflict.
And they wanted Bale.
Bale, that's right. They were going to cast Purcell.
Yeah.
But then Bale came along and said, no, I can do it. So Purcell still was in the film and was like, oh, no hard feelings. And he just has a small part of a resistance fighter. His character's name is actually Seamus.
Yeah, Seamus.
And they don't name him in the film, but, you know, that's how much I know about this movie.
Yeah, I didn't know until I looked at IMDb. And I was like, who the heck is Seamus? And why is he in the number two spot and Taye Diggs is not? So I was like, okay. And I looked into it and, his IMDb picture has him bald. So I'm just like, is he a sweeper?
Right.
Was he in a helmet the whole time? And that's when I found out, he is the resistance fighter from the opening scene.
So the idea is that Christian Bale's character as a Tetragrammaton cleric, he ends up, and we're obviously, when we're spoiled, the movie's about 2002. So it's all, I think it's a given now with our new version of Rebel Radio, there's always spoilers in it. He has to, his partner is Sean Bean, who, of course, the joke over the years is that Sean Bean dies in every movie he's in.
Yes.
And he dies in this one because he is reading a book and Christian Bale learns that he's feeling and showing emotion by reading. Mm-hmm. So his character, John Preston, has to kill his partner, which is Errol Partridge. And played by Sean Bean. And so he has to kill him. But it makes John Preston start looking at the world in a different way. He starts realizing, because of something Partridge says to him, maybe there's more to this. You know, why is emotions not bad? So he stops taking his Prozium.
Yep.
At the influence, though, of a woman he meets named Mary O'Brien, who is sentenced to, what do they call it, decombustion. They basically burned him alive when they are sense feelers, because he goes to her apartment and they find that she's been collecting goods and items and stuff and things that they're not allowed to have. Like things like pretty vases, lamps, everything's outlawed. Everything in this world is very black and white. And they don't want you to have anything that shows any kind of emotion.
No colorful nothing.
So when he busts her apartment, she gets through to him by telling him, you know, why do you do this? Why can't, you know, do you know what's in the outside world? Do you know what it means to love, you know, and things like that? And he can't answer this. So he decides to stop using his Prozium. And so as a Tetragram cleric, he starts to feel. And eventually he starts showing emotion and realizing that there is more to the world. And there's a great scene in the movie when he first, like, wakes up and sees the rain outside and the sunshine coming through the rain. And and it's like, it's emotion that he's never felt. And the movie does a good job of conveying
Starts
that.
Peeling back his mirror.
Yeah.
Or his window. Sorry. No, his
mirror. Cause it's all tinted. And, so eventually the whole other underground plot of the film is that there is an underground resistance, which is why they have to fight the outside world to fight against. So he ends up joining with the resistance and it becomes a pretty simple plot from there on. He fights back against, father and the government and brings him down. And I don't want to say more than that, because the rest of the film does need to be enjoyed if you haven't watched it yet.
Yes.
Some incredible action sequences in this movie, which we're going to talk a little bit about here soon. And what do you think about the actor's performance in this film? One, I think Bale and Taye Diggs are really amazing in this movie.
They really are. And it's funny. There is an underlying theme in this film, you know, that you can never suppress emotion. Like Bale, whenever, you know, there's a scene where he goes to protect his wife, and, you know, how if he didn't feel something, you know, wouldn't he just stand there kind of comatose and just, okay, this is happening?
Well, that's another part of the film we didn't even talk about. Yeah, he is a Tetragrammaton cleric that has had his wife at one time
Yeah, she
brought
she
in for
burned.
Sense offense. Yeah,
and you know, so his kids are without a wife, and you know, his job is to be able to feel what others are feeling.
Right.
Right. You know, so it's funny how this works. And there's you know, I think you've said it before. There's an underlying theme throughout the movie that you can never suppress any human emotion.
Because Bale throughout the film smirks.
So does Ty.
Taye Diggs' character. Well, he's full out smiling.
Yeah, he smiles.
And the first time you watch it, I think I remember seeing it and going, well, aren't they supposed to be not showing emotion? But then when you realize, wait, that's the whole point of the film.
Yeah.
It's the fact that the whole time that they're feeling, so to speak. And
performances were good.
The same with Angus McFadden, who is best known for Braveheart.
Yes.
He's in it, and he plays the voice of Father. And who ends up being Father in the end? Father ends up just being a fake spokesperson, because the real father's been dead for years. The father in the movie is played by Sean Perriworth. I think that's how you say his last name. Who plays Alfred now in Gotham. And and Angus McFadden, same thing. He's kind of smirking and smiling every scene he's in, showing that he's feeling. And all their performances are really well done. Like, that's what I love about sometimes these small budget films like this, sci-fi films or any kind of small budget film, is the actors a lot of times truly care for these projects. More so, not that they don't care about the big budget films.
Right.
But it seems like sometimes they really put their heart in these small budget films. Like a perfect example is a movie that I want to cover one day on here is The Fountain with Hugh Jackman.
Okay.
It's Hugh's best performance you'll see him ever in, almost, I think. He's fantastic in it. The film was shot with very little money, and it's an amazing movie with Hugh Jackman. And it's, again, it's a small budget film that not a lot of money that these actors put their soul into. You know, and that's one thing I think they did with Equilibrium. I really think that Christian Bale, Taye Diggs, Sean Bean, all these people involved that really wanted to make the best sci-fi action film they could.
And it's funny, we almost had Daniel Radcliffe play his son.
His son back before, yeah, I read that.
It would have been funny to see Harry Potter as a son, but yeah, like you said, whenever you don't rely like super heavily on graphics and things of that nature, I think the acting and the story has to be, you know, pretty tight, and we see that in this film. Some things that I really liked was the Tetragrammaton symbol that fires out whenever they
shoot their guns, yeah,
muzzle flash. That's really cool. The way that they modified the Beretta M92.
Which was the gun that was used in RoboCop, but yes. They modified it a little bit.
And they ported the barrel. And they added a selector, which a lot of people were like, "Oh, they made it to where it could go full." Well, those were just the prop versions, but they did make an actual version, similar, obviously, you know, based off the RoboCop gun that did work, just to fire the blanks. But yeah, awesome firearm. I'm surprised that it didn't have a big following just because of the prop value of the guns. That would have been awesome to see more stuff like more. Artifacts and like Think Geek, see stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, this is a good performance by Bale. I was expecting him to drop dead at the end, but it, you know, it left it open right. for like a sequel.
If they ever did.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what's funny is the look of the film is what always got me back when I first saw it in 2002. Wimmer does a great job with the Zeppelins in the air. The cars, a lot of it was filmed at, I think if I remember reading right, an old subway system somewhere overseas in Britain somewhere that wasn't used anymore.
Yeah.
And they were able to give it this futuristic looking look to it with all the blacks and the whites and the matte paintings. And you felt like you were on Earth, but in another world, you know, in a way. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
And the way they painted all the cars white, they made all the clerics wear all black with trench coats. The Sense Offender police force wore like motorcycle looking outfits with helmets and stuff. Very simplistic, but very cool looking. Mm-hmm. And the movie sometimes when it came out got comparison to The Matrix because of the trench coats and the gunfights and stuff. But really, it had nothing to do with The Matrix at all.
It's not like they jumped in the air and then like suspended themselves and were able to defy gravity. People will call it a Matrix ripoff. And I can see... Why? Because you kind of get the feel of, you know, a Matrix-y kind of themed movie, but it's not it's not like, you know, Christian Bale's name is Neo.
Right. And another thing about the film is people is the violence in the movie. It's it's a violent film, but not overly violent to the point where there's a lot of blood. In fact, the movie starts out with a lot of grays and dust shots where people get shot and you see just gray shooting out and dust.
Yeah.
And the movie gets a little bit more violent throughout the end of the movie to the point where Taye Diggs gets his face cut off.
Yeah, that was
and,
cool.
And that was done on purpose because the idea that as a viewer, these people aren't feeling emotion, so you're not feeling the violence, and you grow with the film as well. As the emotion opens up to the Tetragrammaton, to Christian Bale's character, John Preston, your body and your mind opens up to the violence as well as you watch the film. And, you know, it's funny, and I've read a lot about this movie in 16 years, and that's something new I learned. I didn't realize that that was intended for the violence to get more violence as the movie went along.
That's neat.
You know?
That's a good, yeah.
And let's talk about the action sequences in this film and the ideas of gun kata and action. It's funny, there's maybe 8 minutes of action in this film.
Yeah.
But it might be some of the 8 most incredible minutes you've ever seen. We talked a little bit earlier about they created a new form of gunfighting martial arts called that they call gun kata, where the gun is an extension of your martial arts abilities. So you're punching and shooting and firing. And there are some incredible, incredible sequences in this film. Do you have a favorite of yours in the film?
Man, it's I always thought it was whenever they shot out the lights.
And he's at the beginning?
Yeah, at the beginning, and you first see it.
Yeah.
And but now, you know, as I'm more familiar with the movie, it's whenever he basically protects his dog, you know, from the
I love the puppy dog scene too.
Yeah.
He jumps over the bike backwards and it's just it all holy shit on hell unfolds.
Oh yeah, and dude. He just if he was a sleeper agent And he was waking up. That's the moment.
Yeah.
And he just lights him up, man.
I think that's it. That's what it is. That's the moment where he fully realizes he's going against the Tetragrammaton. He's going to join the resistance. It's that moment when he tries to save the dog. And it's an incredible sequence. And at the end too, I love the end too, where he goes into the main warehouse of the father. And the without incident scene, as they call it.
Yes.
And he has a sword. He goes in there. And he has guns, swords, all kinds of weapons, and he just destroys through the building to get to the end, commando style in a way. But it just shows, I think the whole idea that is that the Tetragrammaton are the highest and best they can be. That they can be, any that one Tetragrammaton cleric should be able to take out a room full of people. And that was what they were showing this. He goes in there, and all these highly trained, skilled soldiers, he takes them all out.
Oh, yeah.
With ease, in a lot of ways.
And I guess that's another thing that you could kind of like say is Matrixy. The column, the causeway with all the columns and the soldiers coming out is kind of like whenever they're at the airport scene, the airport lobby. It's not an airport. The building lobby with the check-in station. Whenever they come in and they're like, please remove any metal. And Neo opens up his trench coat. And then all those soldiers come down. This is kind of like that. But like you said, great execution of the gun kata. He lights them up, and the magazines that load from his jacket, really nice stuff. And,
yeah.
I always wondered what those magazines were that he threw on the ground. I thought they were going to be bombs or something whenever I first saw them, and then they're magazines, and I was like, I wonder what's the theory behind the rounded out bottoms.
Yeah.
It looks like an upside down mushroom on the bottom of the gun, but yeah, and then he kick flips the rifle. And takes out the rest of the guys because he's out of ammo. That's an awesome scene.
And then they take gun caught at the end and make the sword an extension of it.
Yes.
And it takes out the 6 or 7 guys with swords. And it's awesome because I love anything with swords. I'm like, he just slices and dices them. And then he has, you know, sometimes we talk about deleted scenes and stuff. There's really not a whole lot of deleted scenes in this film. The only thing we do know is that at the end, he has a quick gun kata battle with Angus McFadden's character, the voice of father, in which they have a final battle. And then the next scene shows up and John Preston's in his all white Tetragrammaton suit and he's got blood on his neck and shoulder and everything. And you don't see it, but apparently there was a scene that might have been the only cut scene in the film where a bullet grazes him, showing that Angus McFadden's character also was Tetragrammaton trained. and that a bullet must have grazed Preston, but they said it didn't come out right in filming, okay. So they cut it. So they assume, you're just supposed to assume that Bale must have gotten hit in the fight with McFadden, and that's why he's got some blood there at the end when he takes out the rest of the resistance. So overall, the action in the film is really spectacularly done, you know, I would say.
Especially, you know, you mentioned him getting grazed. It's like that pistol whip scene. It's referred to as the pistol whip fight scene.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think anyone gets pistol whipped in the scene. They're whipping their pistols, I guess.
Right.
But that's pretty cool. I expected more gunfire, but I guess they're trying not to waste bullets because I'm pretty sure they don't know how
maybe,
much
ammo. And being a low budget, maybe they only had so many bullets to use on film and so many fires, who knows?
And then they're like, oh, maybe we can go to the pawn shop and make our own. And they're like, no, man, I'm not going to be the next Brandon Lee.
You know... I wish that Kurt Wimmer would have directed more films. Yes, he directed Ultraviolet, but we were not getting too heavy into Ultraviolet. But Ultraviolet, he has disowned the film because the studio took it from him. They cut the film to pieces. His original vision of Ultraviolet is completely different than what's on film. The gun kata scenes in Ultraviolet are probably the best scenes in the movie, and even they're not what he wanted. He said the studio went in, they re-edited the gun kata scenes, they sped the film up to make it look faster, because again, he wanted gun kata to be a little bit slower, a little bit more
fluid.
Yeah. So he was not happy with Ultraviolet, and maybe it's why he hasn't directed again. Maybe some of it could be because the movies didn't make a lot of money, but some of it could be he just say, you know what, I'm going to skip and stick to screenwriting. But I think this movie has been popular enough that I think we've seen some influence in other films. I think John Wick borrows, maybe the director of John Wick, I don't know, I'd love to read if they've ever watched Equilibrium.
Yeah.
But they had to borrow some of this. I know the John Wick writers or directors are very influenced by Japanese cinema or in Hong Kong and China and things like that. So because I know they've mentioned John Woo and movies like that in their films. So I know they take some of their gunplay and that from John Wick. But I would think that they've had to have watched Equilibrium because there's similarities to the way John Wick fights with his guns are too similar to gun kata.
They really are. I mean, you can argue that instead of more of a gun martial art, it's martial arts with guns.
Right.
But still, it's like some of the moves that he pulls off, the multiple shots that he fires. It's like it's just the way he handles the weapons. It does remind me a little bit of gun kata, and that's why it's like it reminded me of John Wick whenever he's just like unloading on these guys. I'm like, this reminds me of John Wick, the way he's like kind of cowboying a little bit with not cowboying like rotating the guns with your index finger, but just like crossing your arms while firing and going across your body and laying a shot. It's like, you know, the precision is what kind of looks like John Wick.
Yeah. And, you know, and as far as influence, this movie has influenced me. I've written two fan fictions based on this film.
That's right.
And I wrote them both. One was in 2003. One was probably 2010. They're on TrustMeMajaya.com. So you can go read them there. They're on the site in the Holocron section of the website if you want to read my fan fictions I wrote for this. I wrote prequels that take place before the film. I always had an idea for a third story. I never got around to it. But I don't know if Equilibrium is popular enough to really bother doing it. Maybe I'll get around to writing it one day. Maybe this podcast will bring it back.
Yeah,
people
dude.
Find the need to go watch Equilibrium.
Submit it to Wimmer.
I absolutely love this film. If you were to ask me the desert island question where you could take 10 movies with me, this would be on my list. I would definitely have Equilibrium in my box to take with me to a desert island. I think it's a fantastic sci-fi film. It's not perfect, but that's part of the charm for it, I believe. And if I would change anything for the film, maybe a little more gun kata scenes. That's about it. Otherwise, I think it's pretty good. I don't see what else it needs.
I'd have to agree. And it's funny, you see the resistance leader in the audience, like in the beginning.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about William Fitcher's character of Gergen, is that how you say his
Gergen.
Name? Yeah. And he's such a great character actor, and he appears in this, and he plays the leader of the resistance that Bale finds, and John Preston goes to him, and he they do a lie detector test on him to see if he really is feeling emotion.
Yeah.
And he joins the resistance, and a great character actor, and it was good to see him in a movie like this. That guy has done a lot of work over the years, you know. And he worked with Bale again in The Dark Knight, even though I don't know if they worked together in that film.
Yeah.
But he's in the film with him, you know.
Yeah, he's in the film.
Because he's at the beginning with the scene where the Joker robs a bank. And
it was almost like, I guess there's an illusion that Partridge was working with him
right
at one point. But yeah, I guess Partridge wasn't the guy.
Well, because we even talk about it, like Partridge at one time was in love with Mary O'Brien, the lady that he befriends who gets sentenced to decombustion.
Right.
And so I think there is an illusion that they were all connected between Gergen, Mary, and between Partridge, that they were all connected in a way to help start the resistance in the early days. And there's a lot of underlying themes in the film about feeling emotions and poems and the poetry that Partridge reads to him that connect to why you need to feel and why people need to love. And those are things that not so much need to be talked about, but if you haven't watched the film and discover them for yourself. You know, when he first hears music.
Yes.
He hears a Beethoven composition and he starts
old 45.
He starts to cry because he never felt the power of music before, you know. And I could talk about Equilibrium for quite a while, really. It's such a really good film. I really like watching it. How does it hold up today? I think it's only 16 years. There's not a whole lot of modern films, I think, that aren't holding up. Modern film is so different than Silver Age. When you talk about a film holding up, it's harder for a film, I think, sometimes made in the 60s or 70s to hold up today than something that's made post-2000.
Yeah.
And this was made in 2002. So I think it holds up pretty well. I think it can still match up with some of the good sci-fi films that have come out in the last 15 years.
Yeah,
not that we've had a ton of great sci-fi films.
Yeah, I know.
Great sci-fi is really difficult to find nowadays. You know, it's got to be something unique about it. It's got to be like District 9, a unique take on sci-fi. Or Mad Max Fury Road, a unique action take. But I would put Equilibrium in with those movies as just something unique and different that hadn't necessarily been done before from this standpoint, and it was really well done. And it's a well-shot film, too. It looks great for a low-budget film, as we talked about earlier. And I think I keep going back to that because I remember when I watched this movie in 2002, I'm like, wow, this looks really good for a low-budget sci-fi film. Or maybe I'm just a sucker for stuff that's done with heart. You know?
Oh, that's true. I mean, it could just be that you're just a fan of the genre.
And, you know, I have a feeling this is one of those movies that one day will get remade, that some big director will come along and say, hey, I want to remake Equilibrium, make it bigger and more high budget.
Oh, yeah.
And do fancier gun kata. And they'll use wires. And that's amazing. There was no wire work done in this film.
Yeah, there wasn't.
All the gun kata work, everything that Christian Bale does or the stuntmen do are all done with practical effects, with trampolines, things like that. And that's a pretty amazing fact about the film to know. Any final thoughts on Equilibrium for you?
It still holds up, man. I think you're spot on with the remakes talk.
I could do it one day.
Someone could say, you know, hey, you know what? Chris Evans is John Preston.
Oh, God, no. But we hope you enjoyed listening to us talk about a movie that we really like. And I was looking forward to this episode and talking about Equilibrium. Like, all week long, I was like, man, can't wait to talk about Equilibrium.
Yes.
And if you're interested, if you have seen the movie, go to TrustMeMyJedi.com or read my fan fictions. Tell me what you think. You know, I can take criticism if they suck, you know. And so that's our movie for this week. In a little bit, we're going to tell you what movie we're going to talk about next. We've got a few news things to talk about because, man, it's been a big week for movie trailers.
It really has.
We're going to start with the Marvel trailers that came out before we go full into Solo. We got a trailer for Venom with no Venom.
Yeah, with no Venom.
It was just Tom Hardy like going, and freaking out and having Tourette's or something. And I'm like, I'm not sure what Sony was thinking with this trailer, man. I'm like, I'm really just like, I get it if special effects aren't done, but come on, you can't have one money shot done for the trailer?
Yeah, I mean, at least we technically get to see, well, not Venom, but we get
saw
to see
the symbiote. But it's just like, I normally am not too harsh on a trailer, man, but this was just like, okay, Sony, you just launched a dud. It's like you're gonna have a Venom trailer. You have to show Venom at least once.
What's his name? You know, Marvel dude, Joss Whedon, over there now.
No, I don't think so. Whedon's at DC.
Yeah,
Warner
he's
Brothers.
At DC. Yeah. I was gonna make a Whedon joke, but I guess it doesn't work.
You just ruined a Whedon joke. But I don't know. I mean, I love Tom Hardy, and I hope the film is good. But I just think the trailer was, that's all to be said about that. Really.
I like the fan made one where they took little, you know, things of Bane talking from Batman. I like the one.
I was born in the dark. You merely adopted it.
So Venom trailer, thud.
Thud.
We also got a Deadpool 2 trailer this week. This was cool.
That was cool.
I mean, and I'm not the biggest Deadpool fan, as people who have listened to the show before know. I think he's a very overrated character. I think the first movie was not as good as people made it out to be. It's got good moments in it, but it's not that good, people.
I just don't think it holds up.
People stop lashing on to Deadpool's dick. The movie's not that great. It's okay. But this one looks like a lot of fun. I like the fact that they're adding some characters. Looks like a Deadpool version of X-Force in there.
Yes.
Looks like Shattershot standing in the background. We didn't get any scenes of Colossus in it because the CGI is not done, apparently. But yes, Colossus is in it.
Mm-hmm.
It looks fun. I'm not a big fan of the way the trailer starts with the fourth wall break and the CGI cable.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird because, like, I get Deadpool is supposed to be kind of funny and breaks the fourth wall, but it just doesn't work out of context in the trailer. Surely that's probably not in the movie, but it's just like, because then the trailer gets all serious. I don't know. It was just a weird way to start the trailer for me.
I like this Toy Story kind of reach for the sky.
Oh, yeah. But Cable looks badass.
Yeah,
he does. I like Josh Brolin as Cable. That looks cool.
Josh Brolin? Oh, it was Gordon Ramsay.
No.
Oh.
Gordon Ramsay?
Yeah, no. I thought this was like Hell's Kitchen version of... No?
No, it's Josh Brolin. There must be a joke there. I'm not even...
The original image of him, you know, whenever it was shared, people thought it looked like Gordon Ramsay.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know. but Cable looks cool. I'm excited to see Cable on the big screen. There's...
Is that Domino in there?
Yeah, Domino's in the film. Domino. There was rumors that there's... Someone thinks they see someone in the background or something, another Cable-related character. I can't remember what it was. But, you know, I mean, I do wonder why they moved the movie to May. It's like, what was wrong with it in June?
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, you sandwich yourself between Infinity War and Han Solo. I'm not sure what Fox was thinking there.
I don't know.
I get it that the first Deadpool was a huge hit. But Star Wars, we're going to talk about in just a minute, it's huge. Han Solo is huge. You're coming out a week before... Deadpool's going to have a huge opening weekend, probably $100, $120 million. But the next weekend, you got to think everyone's going to go see Solo.
It's going to drop off.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't get what they... They could have opened in June and probably had a two-week period where they ruled the box office. And now Fox... And I guess that's the bravery of Deadpool character. He thinks he can take on Star Wars. And I just don't see it happening. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how that box office plays out come in May. So Han Solo, we got our first look at it finally.
Yes.
You know, it's funny, all these people worried about where's the look at Solo? Where, you know, is it ever going to come? Now they completely forgot about that because we finally got it.
Yes.
And man, I know sometimes I sound like a hardcore Star Wars fanboy because I seem to love everything they do. But man, I think the movie looks awesome.
It does. He looks just like Han.
Yeah, Aiden Heinrich. I'm probably totally butchering the guy's name.
Yeah.
And you know, when that scene where she says, "I know exactly who you are," and he smiles and says, "Oh, really?" That's a Harrison Ford smile right there. Yeah, I mean, people, you got to remember, no one can replace Harrison Ford.
Nope.
No one. So Aiden, all he can do is go in there and do the best he can. And I saw enough in the trailer to think that he'll be able to pull it off. Obviously, over a two-hour film will be a little different. This is only a minute and a half. But so far, I'm game for it. I like Woody Harrelson's character. I love the look of the film.
Yeah, it looks good.
The grittiness of it, kind of smuggler underworld.
Part of me was like, whenever he's like, "I'm putting together a team." And I'm like, isn't that every movie trailer I see nowadays? I'm like, everyone's putting together a damn team.
I think they're going to play it safe, safe with Solo. It's going to be a simple heist movie. You see how he meets Lando, how he meets Chewie. He gets the Falcon. Nothing fancy. Everyone's all worried, oh, they're going to show his origin, ruin his background. No, they're not. They're going to show us stuff we already know happened. They're just going to show us how it happened. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to ruin his origin, you know. Donald Glover looks cool as Lando.
Yes.
He's got the stash going. They got the colorful outfits. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yes, you know. The Falcon looks a little different. Did you notice that? The front of it's a little different. There's a lot of people saying that's not the Falcon.
Really?
That Lando has a couple of those ships. There's been rumors that maybe that's not the Falcon and that he's going to win a ship that looks like the Falcon.
Ah.
That's why it's so clean inside and so neat that there's possibly more than one Carillion freight.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
Freight ship, you know, that there might be another one in there.
That's
been a rumor. That might not actually be the real Falcon.
That'd be some you know, way to throw something.
A little twist
unexpected.
To it.
Unexpected, yeah.
Yeah. What else about this film?
Harrison Ford coach?
There's been some rumors that he at least called and talked to Aiden a little bit. And,
yeah.
And Aiden, am I saying his name right? You know,
I know it's like Einrich.
I feel like I'm gonna say his name wrong, and you know,
I know it. It's like I'm horrible with names myself, especially guys that are coming onto the scene. And there's so many movies coming.
Alden. Ehrenreich. But it's Alden. I'm saying Aiden. Alden. And but you know, it's the movie looks really awesome. I'm excited for it. I wasn't sure what to think about a Han Solo movie. I wasn't worried about him not releasing a trailer because I think Star Wars is so big. You can put out a trailer 3 or 4 months before a movie comes out. I think it'll be fine. I was just more worried about how Alden was going to do and what it was going to look like. And it's kind of cool seeing a young Chewie. He's got like two, you know, it's Chewie. People didn't talk about it. He has two
bandoliers
on instead of just one. You know, so he must lose one eventually. But overall, man, it's Star Wars, man. I'm game for it. I can't wait. Ron Howard, you know, I think he's going to pull it off. And he's such a consummate professional. He's not saying how much he really shot, even though rumors are he shot up to 75% of the film, reshot it.
Oh, wow.
But he's not going to knock on Phil Lord and Christopher Miller. And he's being a professional about it. He's saying, look, those guys' finger marks from the film, they did have a part in it. I'm putting out what I was asked to do. And that's just the way Ron Howard is, you know, being professional about it. And that's the way it should be.
Bust anybody's balls over it.
And so Solo in a couple weeks. Did I miss any trailers this week? It seemed like a big week.
I don't think. No.
Oh, and one thing I want to touch on real quick before we get to download this is on Facebook this morning, I had a mention from friend of the show, Francisco.
Okay.
I want to give him a shout out on the show because Francisco supports us. Not that there aren't other people support us, but we know him personally, and he's a good supporter of the show. He linked to me that they are making, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because Rebel Radio has always been very genre-based. We always do sci-fi comics, but every now and then we will branch out and do a film. That's what we want to get to eventually that's not sci-fi. Like me and Matt have been texting each other back about maybe doing an Oscar show, doing something like The Hurt Locker or Gladiator or something like that. So they're making a Roberto Clemente movie. Ooh. And I'm a huge baseball fan. Other than sci-fi, I love baseball. And I've always said if there were three players I could go see play, it would be Jackie Robinson, Ernie Banks, and Roberto Clemente. So he sent that to me, and that's exciting news to see. It's going to be from the Oscar-winning director who made the O.J. Made in America TV series. And they're hoping to have it out by start of next year's baseball season. For anyone who doesn't know, Roberto Clemente is a player from – oh, man, I don't want to get his origin wrong.
Oh, man. Is he not Cuban?
No.
Dominican?
I think he might be Dominican. And he he was tragically killed on New Year's in a plane flight, taking supplies and stuff to people that needed it in his country. And so he's got an amazing story to tell, fighting to get over here to play baseball and to go on to do the things he did. So it could make a very – he was Puerto Rican.
Puerto Rican.
Yeah. So it would make a very interesting movie to see what he did because he was very much an activist and doing things in his life to help other people. To him, baseball was secondary. He used baseball as a means to reach out to people and to do things for people that were less fortunate to him. So it looks like we're going to get a Roberto Clemente movie. And that's why I wanted to talk about it because I just wanted I hope people are cool with that. You know, I know they listen to us because they love the sci-fi and action, but eventually we would like to venture off and do some other films. I don't think we'll do it real often.
No,
we're going to stay in the vein of the things we enjoy, but every now and then we might do a serious movie, so to speak, you know, and things like that. So with that being said, let's do download this. This is what we've been streaming, watching lately, and I think we're probably both going to pick the same show this
week. Absolutely.
I guess we've been watching Altered Carbon. The whole thing. I'm only three episodes in. Man, I was burning through the first three, and the last couple of days I haven't had a chance to sit down and watch another one. Oh, man, but this show is cool as shit.
It is, man. It's the Ghost in the Shell series live action that we've wanted, but as Altered Carbon.
If you haven't watched it yet, basically, in the future, they found a way to keep your consciousness inside a computer chip in your body, basically.
Yes.
So if you die, you can be reborn in what they call a new sleeve, a new body. They just plug your consciousness in. Some people are poorer than others, so they have to wait hundreds of years maybe while their family saves up money to bring them back to life. Mm-hmm. Some people are rich and can constantly live forever, like 300 years. And some people, yeah, it's weird. It's an unmoral, weird concept, but it's kind of cool for sci-fi reasons. And Joel Kinnaman, who was best known for The Killing and the RoboCop remake and Suicide Squad, he plays this cop Well, he's not even really a cop. He's really a bad dude.
Yeah, he's
that
a
was,
bad dude.
That was killed, and his consciousness was put on file for years, and they bring him back to life to be a detective, to be a cop, to help this rich guy find out who killed him, who killed the rich guy who was brought back to life. It's really gets a little confusing. It gets a little crazy. But it's very cyberpunkish, very, very Blade Runner sci-fi. So if you like that kind of stuff, really cool action sequences. They're uniquely shot. And it's based on a series of novels, apparently. So
yes.
There might be a few seasons of this. They haven't officially announced a season two yet, but apparently Netflix was working for a couple of years to get this off the ground, that there was a lot of work. It's got to be an expensive show because it looks first rate for a television show.
I mean, you had to pay for all those girls to take their tops off.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of topless girls in it.
And Ortega, she's from Smoking Aces. She's the girl from Smoking Aces. She's taken her top off before, but this movie.
That's all about got out of the hole. Because you already finished all. Was
she
it
reminds 10, me of my wife.
Finished for about 10 episodes, and you've already watched them? Yeah.
Spicy Latina lady. And she's ornery. She doesn't take no for an answer. And apparently she can't drive worth shit. Because in the first episode, she like almost crashes this thing trying to land it.
But a really cool show, man. I mean, people look for stuff to tide them over until the next Stranger Things comes out or whatever. If you want something really cool, check out Altered Carbon. It's really, really neat.
I have friends that are watching it again, and I might start just rewatching
it. It's heavy. Yeah, you got it. You can't put it on. You can't put it on and go in the kitchen. You do have to watch it. But it's so good. I think my only weird thing about it is like Joel Kinnaman all beefed up. Does he look weird to you?
A little bit.
He's got
like
a small head.
Yeah.
And in Suicide Squad, he's not all beefed up, or even in RoboCop, but like they made him work out for this, and it's like, it's kind of awkward. He's got a little head.
Yeah, he looks like a sleeve. He looks like a android to me.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Maybe it was not on purpose. I don't know.
Maybe.
And but I look forward to finishing it. I know you finished it. I've heard that there's a twist in it that you don't really see coming.
Yeah, you don't.
And it comes and they don't wait till the end to reveal it. Apparently, it's like in episode 8-ish or so.
Yeah, 8-ish.
Yeah,
they
throw a big
that.
Twist and you're like, what? So I look forward to getting there to that point. But yeah, that's all I've been watching. I haven't really downloaded or watched anything else. Oh, I did watch the theatrical version of It, and it sucked.
Yeah.
Plot holes galore. You and me were texting about it.
Yeah, they got some. To me, they got some things right.
I'm just
but
like
the way they portrayed the.
I
monster.
Guess when it came out in September, it became a theatrical phenomenon to go see it because there hadn't been any horror films. It was Stephen King had a real huge film out in years. People came off The Dark Tower, which people didn't like.
Yeah.
I watched Dark Tower. I wasn't too harsh on it. I just took it for what it was. But I haven't read the book, so I have no say in it. Mm-hmm. I haven't read It either. But I can see plot holes in a movie when there's plot holes.
Yes.
And there's things that have plot holes galore. But we won't get too hard into it. It's great. People liked it. Made a lot of money in box office. We're going to do a sequel. And I'm not saying I won't watch the sequel because I would like to see what happens.
Yeah.
But I just didn't think it was that great. You know, visually it was cool. It had some cool visual moments.
Yeah, cool visual stuff.
Bill Skarsgård, he was creepy as it, you know. That was about it.
That was about it. I think they got the portrayal of the kids' situations at home. Pretty spot on.
Yeah.
Beverly's situation, they did that like that was tit for tat. I think it was more dramatic than whenever I first saw the film and in the books. It's a good depiction.
And it's kind of
probably the strongest.
Kind of weird seeing the kid from Stranger Things in it.
Yes,
because he filmed this before Stranger Things became real popular.
Yeah,
And it's kind of weird because he's like cussing in it, and it's just
yeah, dude, he's like some punk.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a different character than he is in.
Kind of punkish.
So that was interesting. But that's all I've watched as far as downloading, streaming, and anything else on download this.
I spent all my time binge watching Altered Carbon. Nothing.
So the next movie we're going to talk about on the Rebel Radio Podcast. We hope you enjoyed Equilibrium today. We're going to go back to the 90s and do a film. We did a cult film this week. We're going to do a really super popular film next week. Maybe in 2 weeks. We don't know. We might record next week. We'll see. But we're going to do Jurassic Park.
Yes.
Spielberg. Steven Spielberg, one of our greatest directors of all time. Matt, you were, maybe 6-7 years old when Jurassic Park came
out.
Very
impressionable.
I saw it in theaters.
Nine.
And I remember seeing it in theaters and just being... It might be the first movie that blew me away with special effects.
Yes.
just sitting there watching these dinosaurs come to life on the big screen. And I'm at this point, what was it, year 93 it came out?
No, I thought it was 95.
No, it's not that late. That had to be the sequel. But I remember watching it in TV on the big screen and being completely blown away by just the way these special effects looked, you know. And 1993 for Jurassic Park. So I was
7.
93, I was 16 years old. So I'm okay. Still very young enough to be impressionable.
Oh, yeah.
And just seeing the dinosaurs brought to life, amazing special effects, amazing film work. One of the great popcorn films of our time.
Yes.
It's funny because Spielberg is arguably the grandfather of popcorn films with Jaws. And then he does Raiders of the Lost Ark in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Then the 90s, he does Jurassic Park. Then he got serious with serious films in the 2000s. Mm-hmm. And now he's doing another popcorn film next month with Ready Player One, which I can't wait to see.
Yes.
So I can't say enough about Spielberg when it comes to film. He might be one of those directors that has influenced me as much as George Lucas as far as the things I like. So looking forward to talking about Jurassic Park. And if people don't know, we're not kind of just picking these movies out of the hat. Yeah, they're movies we love, but we talk to each other. We kind of take turns picking films. And yeah. Matt picked Jurassic Park, and I was like, that's a good, interesting choice. You know, it'd be. And sometimes we've done a couple of serious films in a row with Enter the Dragon and Nuclear Sci-Fi. Let's do a fun movie, a fun popcorn film, and have some fun with Jurassic Park.
It was kind of inspired by the trailer coming out for Jurassic World 2.
Or Jurassic World 2, Jurassic Park 5, whatever number it is. Series. So that'll be next week or in 2 weeks, whenever we record. Next episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast will be Jurassic Park. But until then, oh, another thing, real quick announcement. We are now on iHeartRadio.
Yes.
So iHeartRadio is very popular. I know tons of people like it. So those of y'all that, like, if you don't want to use Stitcher or Google Play or iTunes, you can get us on iHeartRadio now. So if you're working out, you can work out to our sexy voices.
That's right.
Not that we're great workout music, yeah, you know. But that's a we're really glad to be on there. I've been submitting to them 2 or 3 times, and finally they accepted our show. So we're on iHeartRadio now. The link is on trustmeonvajaya.com. Soon to be on the rebelradiopodcast.com. Not yet. Probably you'll see an announcement, but probably about a month from now, maybe sooner.
It's in progress.
I definitely by April 1st is my goal to have the Rebel Radio Podcast up and running, so we have it ready to go going into Comic Palooza 2018 and everything else. So TrustMeJaya.com right now for Rebel Radio Podcast. You can find us on our iHeartRadio. That's our big news for the day. And that's all we've got. So until next time, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
Thank you for listening as always to the Rebel Radio Podcast. Just go there and do it.
Coming soon to a theater near you.
Welcome to Jurassic Park.
We've made living biological attractions so astounding that they'll capture the imagination of the entire planet.
The most phenomenal discovery of our time.
How'd you do this?
Becomes the greatest adventure of all time.
Can I touch it?
Sure.
Universal Pictures presents.
You feel that?
Hold on to your butts.
A Steven Spielberg film.
Fences are failing all over the park.
Yeah, that's nice. Gotta go.
An adventure.
Look out! Down!
I can't get Jurassic Park back online.
65 million years in the making. Jurassic Park.
Hey, it's Alfonso Berry. Listen to the Rebel Radio Podcast.
This is James O'Barr on Rebel Radio. Thanks for listening.
Hey, this is Marky Ramone, and you're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast.